නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ dear Dhamma friends, so we were discussing Puttapada Sutta, and it's a long discourse. Therefore, it is included in the Digha Nikaya, long discourses of the Buddha. And so if I summarize the discussion so far, what we have done, so basically Puttapada is one of the wandering ascetic. He had many followers, and they were discussing some different matters at a particular place, and Buddha approached there, and then the Puttapada raised a question asking how the cessation of perception is brought in successive steps, how one may gradually cease the perception. So basically, when that is mentioned, so Buddha gave a comprehensive answer. So the essence of the sutta is mainly that, and that is what I have summarized here in this chart, in this diagram. So basically, Buddha gave a threefold answer in that sense. So basically, when Puttapada asks how this gradual cessation of perception happens, so one can interpret it as how gradual conceptual proliferation also happens. Because as you know, perception, signs are the root cause for mental proliferation. So therefore, if one is able to gradually calm down, gradually eliminate different kinds of perceptions, that automatically will eliminate the various kinds of proliferations one may have. And on the other hand, when perceptions calm down, perceptions completely cease, that also has a effect on the consciousness. The consciousness also has to go to a kind of a non-proliferative state or non-established state, because otherwise this can't be successful. So there are interlinks between this question, even though the question is related to the cessation of perceptions. Now, when Buddha starts giving the answer without immediately starting the solution, he first of all put aside one wrong idea, that is, one person has put forward. He has mentioned that these perceptions happen due to no reason, and therefore it is completely out of control. So therefore it is not a kind of a cause and effect relationship. But altogether, Buddha denied that, and Buddha mentioned perceptions do occur due to causes and conditions. And again, Buddha mentioned as a kind of a rule of thumb that some perceptions arise through training and some perceptions pass away through training. So training is the significant fact here. So then Buddha starts to elaborate what kind of training that one has to undergo in order to calm down harmful perceptions and in order to arouse beneficial subtle perceptions. Now he starts first of all with morality and given a complete account of morality, because Puttapada and the group are an ascetic group, and they are into renunciation, and therefore Buddha oriented this sermon more into the renunciation, and therefore a comprehensive account of sila, morality, is included in the sutta. And after mentioned that, sense restraint also mentioned as indriya sangvara, because now one is going through kind of an operation where one has to continue one's practice carefully. So if one has real determination to calm down mental proliferation, calm down various forms of perceptions, then one has to avoid the incoming events, incoming beneficial or harmful perceptions into the mind. So through the senses, they are continuously coming in, and one has to have some restraint in order to minimize that. And then on the other hand, mindfulness and clear comprehension has to be developed, so that one is aware of what is going on, And it is not limited to a sitting posture, walking posture, rather it is a ongoing process distributed throughout the whole bodily behavior, verbal behavior and mental activities. So therefore, mindfulness and clear comprehension is another aspect of the practice. And having all these things, one may be content and not that going after this and that. Rather, what if one has something, if it is dependable, if that is enough, so then one can maintain that kind of a contentment without going after various luxurious items. Therefore, when this is oriented towards monks, so the four requisites are the primary needs of the monk, and so regarding those four requisites, a monk is quite satisfied, has to be satisfied. If he is going after most valuable items, so that is not the type, that is not the proper monkhood that the Buddha is proclaiming here. So he mentioned that whatever the pindapatha, whatever the arms that you get, whatever the robes you get, whatever the dwelling place you have, and whatever the medicine you have, so just try to be satisfied with bare minimum. So that is the advice in the contentment. And you are quite happy, not that you think about the best and have some sort of an unsatisfaction, kind of a frustration, but contented with what you already have. After mentioning all these things, so Buddha now get on to the mental development part, the Samadhi Sikha, and that is where gradually the concentration is developed. So first of all, the five hindrances are subsided, and then as a result of that, gladness arises in the mind. And then when the gladness is available, fair amount of happiness and pleasure, piti, rapture going to arise in the mind. As a result of that, the body becomes calm, tranquil, mind also becomes tranquil. And when the body and the mind are tranquil, one may experience happiness, one may experience comfort, feeling at ease. As a result of that, automatically mind gets concentrated. So the concentration is a such that kind of a gradual development, and it happens as a kind of cause and effect relationship, and therefore concentration is now fairly available. And now Buddha directly touched the question raised by Potapath, that is how certain gross kind of perceptions are eliminated and subtle perceptions, maybe useful perceptions, are aroused during the practice. Now he mentioned, before one attains first jhana, one was with some gross perceptions due to sensual desires, ill will, sotta and torpor, restlessness and worry, and various doubts. So those are actually the ones cluttering the mind, and all those perceptions which cause to crowd the mind are all now eliminated. Instead of those, now subtle perception of delight and happiness born of detachment or born of relinquishment are available in the mind. So therefore now it is a very healthy atmosphere available in the mind, and the perceptions available are also very subtle, and all the other gross harmful perceptions pertaining to the five sense cords are now temporarily subsided. So Buddha's statement, because of the training, some beneficial subtle perceptions are being aroused, and all harmful gross perceptions are being put aside. And then Buddha further explained that how one may come to the second jhana by eliminating vitakka vichara, applied mind and a sustained mind. So now one may has even subtle perception, and that is more stronger than the in terms of the concentration, that is more stronger than the first jhana. So therefore the perceptions are available right now in the second jhana is happiness born of concentration. Mind does not waver. Mind is fairly fixed. Mind is fairly concentrated. So as a result of that, second jhana is more with concentration and rupture, because all the hindrances are put aside. Now one reaches third jhana, there what one has is the equanimity born and the happiness. So fair amount of happiness, contentment, equanimity, so those are the characteristics in the third jhana. So the little gross rupturous perceptions are now eliminated. Instead of that, more subtle happiness, contentment are available in the third jhana. And then one reaches fourth jhana, even that happiness being eliminated, now more mature kind of equanimity is available in the fourth jhana. And so far actually we were in the material realm. Now one shifts to the immaterial realm or the arupa jhana. There also Buddha explains how one reaches subtle levels, subtle jhanic levels through the practice. And after one reaches the final, that is the nothingness, according to this sutta, so that Buddha mentioned as a sanyagga, the summit of perception. And there are one interesting determination that the yogi made. So that is where he actually going through this whole practice, he understood. So whenever I am inclined towards a new kind of perceptions and trying hard and make intentional kind of pursuit, intentional kind of endeavor to achieve it, then those gross perceptions are eliminated. Now new subtle perception is aroused. Again and again, that's what has happened. After understanding that, so he had a kind of interesting determination. How about not having a new perception at all? How about eliminating all the available perceptions and not making any intentional effort? So this kind of a radical determination now the yogi is making, because he understood the disadvantages of this newly arisen perceptions and again this whole procedure. So he make a kind of a radical reflection not to make any intentions and not to make any kind of preparations or fabrications. He altogether stopped the fabrications and he don't make any intention. So as a result of that, Buddha mentioned now one may touches the cessation, the Nirodha. And then a very interesting question asked by Pottapada. So Pottapada is asking now, is it just the one summit of perception available through which that one is able to touch the cessation, or are there many summit of perceptions available? Then Buddha mentioned, I declare even one summit of perception and I declare many summits of perception. Then how? Buddha mentioned, wherever that you are, if you are able to stop altogether these making intentions and to incline towards any new kind of perceptions, if you make that determination at any given place and you are able to touch the cessation, so those bases can be considered as summit of perception. So there are many summits of perception. So if one makes that radical reflection and while being in the first jhana, so one is able to successfully, I mean, if he was successful, he was able to touch the Nirodha, touch the cessation. So this is very much the discussion that we have gone through so far. And this is very much the essence of the sutta. And now we'll get on to the other part. Now what Buddha further explains. Now after mentioning that whole thing, now Pottapada get on to ask various kinds of other questions. Now he actually is a person with self-view, following different kinds of wrong views. So as a result of that, he actually get on asking various questions related to the soul. And even before that, he asked whether the perception come first or the knowledge come first. And the commentary mentioned this is in different ways. So commentary actually gives different explanation to these questions. Anyway, one explanation given is that whenever a kind of an awakening happened in one particular person, in a practitioner, whether the awakening happened first or the knowledge about the awakening happens first. Then Buddha mentioned the perception of the awakening happened first, and then the reflections, the paccavekkhana jnana, the reflection knowledges are happening next. So that is how this question being interpreted in the commentary. And this, after mentioned that, now Potapada get on to his typical soul-oriented questions, and now he is asking, Bante, is the perception a person's self? Now, this is being somewhat criticized by various commentaries, because Buddha went through a kind of a gradual process, never mentioned about anything called soul, but Potapada is now diverting the discussion to another direction. That is the question of soul. And now when Potapada asks whether the perception is person's soul or person's self, then Buddha asks, what do you mean by the soul? What do you postulate by a self? And then Potapada mentioned the self that I am talking here is a gross made out of four elements and feeding off solid food. So basically that is the body that he is referring as the self here. Olarika Attapatilabha. So this is referred as Olarika Attapatilabha. So a kind of a self made with four elements and fed with the solid food. So that is the body. So he here consider the body as the self. Then Buddha mentioned there are various perceptions arouse out of even, I mean, out of the body. So perceptions arouse in the mind. So therefore, even though you consider body as the self, now perceptions are available in the mind. So they are available again and again. So therefore, we can say, if you consider body as self, since perceptions are different, so you can't say body, the body as a self. So basically the perceptions as a self, because if one's perception is the self, so one has to have full control of it. It can't arouse out of it. So perceptions can't arouse out of the self. Now when Potapada consider body as the self, when perceptions arouse out of that domain, so that indicates or that proves Potapada's postulation is wrong. So therefore Buddha deny that self is basically one thing, and that is the body that you are talking here, and the perception is another thing. So therefore Buddha denies the question. And then Potapada now asks a separate question, whether the self is the mind-made self, Manomaya Attapatilabha. Now he is going to the mental level, and it doesn't have any defects due to various bodily sense organs. Rather, it's a completely mind-made one. Now it's a mind-made self, Potapada is talking. Still, it is rupee. It is still visible. And now Potapada asks that question. And even there, Buddha mentioned the same answer. So there are perceptions aroused even out of this domain, even the out of mind-made level. So therefore, you can't consider self as the mind-made self, be a kind of a mind-made self, and the perception is different. So there also, Buddha didn't agree. And again, now Potapada asks, I assume a formless self, completely formless. There is no rupa, no matter at all. And is it made up of perception? And there also Buddha mentioned perception still arouse at other places. Therefore, you can't even consider formless self as the perception. Say, for example, if one is considering formless self as the perception, whenever other kinds of perceptions arouse, so if they are not in that category, so that means so this those perceptions are out of the self. So therefore, considering self as the perception in this sense also not possible. So likewise, Buddha basically did not agree telling any of these solutions as the self or as the perception. And now What about the further get on asking various other questions, which are very much like Buddha purposely put aside, purposely never answered. So those are very much like undeterministic questions. Vyakarana. So basically, different people come forward and ask various questions about the soul, about the next life of a Tathagata. So likewise, these are very philosophical kind of questions, and again mostly based on the self view. And those are around 10 questions are there, and all those 10 questions now asked by Pottapada. Now he starts to ask, is the world eternal? And Buddha mentioned that I am not declaring something like that, I am not telling anything about it. Then Pottapada asks whether the world is not eternal. Then the further Buddha mentioned, I am not determined on that, I am not declaring anything like that. And then Pottapada asks whether the world is infinite or whether it is not infinite. So there also Buddha mentioned, I am not telling anything about it, I simply put aside that question. And then Pottapada came to ask about the soul and whether the soul is the body or the body is different from the soul. There also Buddha put it aside. And after mentioning that, now he is asking about the result of the passing away of a Tathagata. So basically here we can consider Tathagata as the Buddha as well as the Tathagata as the Arahant. So Tathagata, the word Tathagata literally means the one who has gone. And basically this question applied even to the Arahant. So people are asking, so what happened after the Arahant passed away? So even at the end of the death, after the death, is the Tathagata exist? Then Buddha, there also Buddha don't answer. So Buddha mentioned, I am not answering that. I am not determining. I am not giving a deterministic or definite answer on that. And then Pottapada asks the opposite, whether Tathagata does not exist after death. Or then he asks whether both exist and not exist. Then he asks, neither exist nor none exist. Now all these four questions are quite popular and available in many suttas, and many ascetics come and ask either from the Buddha or ask from various other companion monks, and they basically don't go on to answer these questions, and they basically put them aside. And after Buddha put them aside without giving any definite answer, then Pottapada asked another question. And he asked, why Buddha is not answering these questions? That is also a very interesting question, by the way. So Buddha, if he has omniscient knowledge, he should answer these questions. But now Buddha is not answering. Then Pottapada asked, why are you not answering them? Then Buddha mentioned very interestingly, so those questions are not conducive to the spiritual life and not conducive to Dhamma. And they don't arouse any kind of urgency to go out of the samsara. And again, they do not lead to any disenchantment, do not lead to any dispassion, and not to the cessation, or to calm down the mind towards the higher knowledge, or to achieve enlightenment, or to achieve Nibbana. So therefore, all these questions are more confusing and based on wrong view of a self. And therefore, it is get on to more and more thicket of wrong views. And more one thinks, more one become more confused and going out of the spiritual path, one become more and more confused, engrossed in various views. So therefore Buddha mentioned, I am not answering these questions. Now, Vattapada asks, what you are basically answering, or what you have properly declared. I mean, all these 10 questions, Buddha not giving definite answer, he is not declaring any definite answer. Now, Potapada asks, what you have kind of a definite answer, for what you are having definite answer, what you declare basically. So there Buddha mentioned about the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering, there is cause of suffering, there is cessation, and there is a path leading to the cessation of suffering. There is cessation of suffering, and there is a path leading to the cessation of suffering. So basically, Four Noble Truths are the ones that Buddha mentioned that I am telling as a definite fact, which is leading to the enlightenment. So actually, that question again asked by the Potapada, why you are declaring these four truths? What is the special reason? Then Buddha mentioned, so this actually serve the purpose. Actually, when one is considering these four truths, when one's practice is more oriented towards these four truths, then basically he's in the proper track, he's in the proper path. And again, that kind of a practice is conducive to Dhamma and conducive to the enlightenment, and it is making the purpose of the holy life. And it will lead to the calmness, higher knowledge, to enlightenment, to Nibbana. So basically, these are the four areas that I am talking, I am explaining in with more definite terms, and therefore I am talking all these Four Noble Truths. And after mentioning that, so Potapada is now happy with Buddha's answers, and always when Buddha says something, he was quite agreeable, and he actually praised Buddha for his answers, even though he's a wandering ascetic, having basically some wrong views still, but still he could appreciate Buddha's answers, and he basically invited Buddha to give his own views. So likewise, Buddhabhadra was quite loyal to Buddha in that sense, agreeable to the Buddha. And now at the end of the discussion, now Buddhabhadra say, okay Bhante, now it is the time for you to continue your Pindapatha. So likewise, he basically concludes the discussion. And then Buddha rise up, and then he went out. And after Buddha left, an interesting thing happened. Now, when Buddhapada and Buddha was discussing all these things, there were many other followers around Buddhapada. And actually, they are Buddhapada's students and the followers. They were not happy about this discussion. Even though Buddhapada was quite delighted with Buddha's answer and was praising the Buddha, none of the others. So immediately after Buddha left, so they start blaming Potapada. So it is mentioned like they approached, sneered and jeered at Potapada from all different sides. So they were telling, I mean, you were simply behaving like a student of when ascetic Gautama. Whenever he tell this, you always praised him. So but he didn't answer any of the questions that you asked at the end, those 10 questions where Buddha didn't give a definite answer. So basically, so you did the wrong thing. So basically, they started criticizing Potapada. And then actually, Potapada make a very honest opinion here, honest comment here. So he mentioned, yes, it is true. Buddha didn't answer those 10 questions, but he is showing a path. He's showing a path which is taking whoever the practicing to a more sublime level, more supramundane level. So I can feel it. I can really have some understanding about it. When I have such kind of an understanding about his path, when I can really appreciate it, how I can criticize him? So therefore, this Potapada make a very honest comment there. Even though his followers, students are criticizing him for approving the Buddha, So again, he mentioned, even though Buddha didn't answer those 10 questions, he still declared a very interesting path, which is leading towards more sublime states, which is leading towards enlightenment. So by knowing that, I can't criticize him. So he make a very interesting comment there. So here, but the ascetic Gautama teaches a true and real way of practice, which is consonant with Dhamma and grounded in Dhamma. And why should not a man like me express approval of such a true and real practice, so well taught by the ascetic Gautama? So this is the comment that Potapada is making. So he admit that Buddha has kind of a very good solution, even though he didn't answer those 10 questions. Now that episode is now over. Now Buddha also has left, so this discussion has finished. And now, after another 2-3 days, Potapada go to meet the Buddha. Now, in this occasion, actually, Buddha visited Potapada's place. Now, after 2-3 days, Potapada with another companion go to meet the Buddha. The other companion is one called Chitta, the son of an elephant trainer, Chitta Hatti Sariputta. So he's a son of elephant trainer. Chitta is the name. Not the Chitta as the mind, here Chitta is the name of the person. Now Potapada not went alone to meet the Buddha, but he accompanied this Chitta. Now after he went to meet the Buddha, so they had a typical cordial discussion. And then Potapada remembered the discussion that he and the Buddha had 2-3 days ago. And he mentioned, so after Bhante you left, all those ascetics, all those wanderers, actually they started criticizing me because I approved you. I understood what you were talking. But they started criticizing me. So he actually revealed what has happened. Then Buddha make an interesting comment here. Potapada, all those wanderers are blind and sightless. You alone among them are sighted. So basically only the Potapada has a kind of a vigilance, intellect, to understand what Buddha was talking. None of the others. So therefore Buddha here praised Potapada's that skill. And he mentioned that none of the others actually understood what I was talking. So basically, Buddha again reiterated that he didn't answer those 10 questions because those are not conducive to the practice, not conducive to Dhamma, not leading towards enlightenment, towards Nibbana. So therefore, I am not answering those 10 questions. But I am declaring Four Noble Truths. If one is talking about them, if one is searching about them, if one is practicing about them, then that is leading towards the end of suffering. That is leading towards the enlightenment, towards Nibbana. That is why I am giving a definite answer on those. So, now this discussion, basically, okay. I think we have covered, actually I have to go to another entirely different topic hereafter. Still coming into the Potapada Sutta. Now, if we little elaborate more on to the Four Noble Truths, where Buddha mentioned more with emphasis and more with the determined answer that he is giving. So he is pointing out this is suffering. And then this is the arising of suffering. Cause of suffering, and this is the ending of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and this is the path leading to the ending of suffering. So now these are the Four Noble Truths. In summary, Buddha highlights, and all his teaching is very much summarized. There is suffering. Now there is suffering is a kind of an objective form, a kind of a statement which is more directing. It is not that I am suffering, there is your suffering, or there is my suffering. Rather, his statement is idang dukkhang arya satcha. So there is suffering. So objectively, he is putting it like there is suffering. And then there is the cause of suffering. So the cause of suffering is there, that you need to look at it. There is cause of suffering. And there is cessation of suffering. And there is a path leading to the cessation of suffering. Now you can see there is no self there. There is no person there. Rather, there is suffering. Now this has to be properly understood. Otherwise, it's very difficult to explain the Buddha's teaching. So everything, in essence, Buddha talks in the cause and effect relationship in terms of the dependent origination. And so there is suffering and there is a cause of suffering. So there is a cause of suffering. As a result of that, they are going to have suffering. And if you are able to practice a path leading to the cessation of suffering, so yeah, the outcome is the cessation of suffering. So therefore, cessation of suffering is something that one can achieve by practicing Buddha's teaching. So therefore, ultimate result is cessation of suffering. In other terms, happiness. So if one is practicing Four Noble Truths, so what he slowly start to experience is not the suffering, but the cessation of suffering. More and more, he should experience less and less suffering. Now, therefore, one can't say that Buddha is talking every time about the suffering. Rather, he admit there is suffering, and again admit there is a cause of suffering. But now he declares a path. If one practices that properly, which leads to the cessation of suffering. So therefore, the outcome, the final result, is not suffering. It's actually the cessation of suffering, Nibbana. So therefore, the result is very much a more positive aspect, not something negative. So some people actually criticize Buddha's teaching that he always talking suffering, but he starts with suffering, but the result of the practice is not the suffering, rather the end of suffering. So that one needs to understand. And again, there is suffering here is kind of a, even though it is simply a statement, so one needs to understand what is suffering. So that is also Buddha, very clearly mentioned. So basically, he mentioned it in many different ways. One answer, one explanation is that all five aggregates, clinging aggregates, are suffering. And another answer is all sense bases are suffering. So you can see, so whatever the conditioned phenomena as suffering. So when one try to look at suffering and the other truths, so there are kind of a stages that one has to go through. So each and every this what you call noble truth has three aspects. So there is a theoretical part, what we call as the pariyatti, and then there is patipada, a practice, and then the result, that is called pativeda. So it is applicable to the first noble truth, applicable to the second noble truth, applicable to the third noble truth, and applicable to the fourth noble truth. So altogether, 3 into 4, there will be 12-fold kind of answer, a full comprehensive answer Buddha is giving. So if one needs to understand Four Noble Truths, therefore one has to understand them in all these three angles to each and every noble truth. So with respect to the first noble truth, the theory part, is that there is suffering. Now, what is suffering then? So Buddha tell, okay, five aggregates are suffering, five clinging aggregates are suffering. And there are other answers Buddha given, like say birth is suffering, decaying is suffering, aging is suffering, disease is suffering, being with the dislike is suffering, separation from the liked is suffering, and whatever one like not having it is also suffering, and ultimately, in summary, all five Nihin aggregates are suffering. Now, if one needs to practice, one needs to understand this suffering. So, understanding is the main thing with respect to the first noble truth, Dukkhaṃ Pariññāyaṃ. So, it is not that you are trying to get rid of suffering, rather you have to fully comprehend suffering. It doesn't mean that you have to go in search of different kinds of suffering and torment yourself to understand suffering. Rather, one needs to understand more precisely or more accurately the five clinging aggregates. Because Buddha mentioned five clinging aggregates are the suffering. The five clinging aggregates, the material aggregate, the rupakkhanda, then the feeling aggregate, perceptions aggregate, formations aggregate, and the consciousness aggregate. So one has to explore these five aggregates if one needs to understand the first noble truths. So if one did a fair amount of exploration, fair amount of investigation onto these five clinging aggregates, then to some extent one can say, yes, I understood five clinging aggregates. And with respect to the second noble truth, that there is second noble truth, the cause of suffering. So that is the craving, and there are three kinds of craving. The sensual desire, then the desire to become, and desire to get rid of. Kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha. So with respect to tanha, craving, the activity, the patipada, what needs to implement is to abandon craving. Dukkha samudayam pahatabba. One needs to abandon the cause of suffering. And if one has done that, then one may understood the task or the result, that is, one has already abandoned the cause of suffering. And when one reaches the third noble truth, so third noble truth is referred as an Nibbana, the cessation of suffering. And it is mentioned chago, patinissaggo, mutti, analyo. So basically the relinquishment, the abandonment of suffering, the craving, then release, freedom, dispassion. So these are the terms referred to indicate the Nibbana. And Buddha mentioned the patipada is to realize Nibbana, that one needs to realize Nibbana. Not just imagine or read about Nibbana, but one has to practically realize Nibbana. The third aspect is that one needs to, if one is realized, then one can say, yes, I understood, I realized the Nibbana. So the fourth noble truth is the path leading to realize Nibbana, path leading to the cessation of suffering. So what is the path? So that is Noble Eightfold Path. So Noble Eightfold Path, theoretical understanding is that, okay, you have three trainings, Sila Sikha, Samadhi Sikha, Panya Sikha, the morality is concentration and wisdom. So this is simply the theoretical part. The practical path, the Patipada, is that one needs to develop it. One can't just read about it, but rather one needs to live according to it. One needs to cultivate it. One needs to cultivate the right view. One needs to cultivate the right intention. One needs to cultivate the proper words, proper activities, a proper livelihood. And one has to develop the mindfulness, one has to develop concentration, one has to develop some wisdom. So likewise, there are cultivations, developments one needs to do. So therefore, the aspect of the fourth noble truth is that it has to be bhavetabbang. Dukkha nirodha gamini patipada bhavetabbang. One needs to cultivate it, one needs to develop it. And when one has fully developed it, then one can say, it's okay, I have done it, I have fully developed it. So likewise, interestingly, so Buddha's whole teaching is fairly oriented towards these four noble truths. So we were discussing about five aggregates. So those five aggregates coming under the first noble truth. We have discussed various kinds of practices, say with respect to the Pottapada Sutta, or with respect to the Sabbasava Sutta, so Anapana Sati Sutta, Satipatthana Sutta. So all these are different practices where Buddha orients at these different four truths. Either they are operating at the level of the suffering, first noble truth, or either they are operating at the level of the second noble truth, third noble truth, or the fourth noble truth. So all these different teachings that Buddha explained, we can actually put into these four noble truths. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so I declare these four noble truths. This is my core teaching. So this I am telling with definite. This I am telling more firmly, because these are leading to the end of suffering. These are leading towards the Nibbana. These are leading towards the enlightenment, to the dispassion, to say, towards the disenchantment, to go out of the samsara. So that is why I am giving more emphasis. That is why I am teaching these four noble truths. But I am not talking about the 10 indeterministic questions that I am putting aside. So this answer Buddha is giving to Pottapada, and he reiterates even when Pottapada and Chitta comes to meet him. So we'll discuss further about their discussion, what Buddha was discussing with Chitta and the Pottapada when they are meeting. So with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.